Margaret Prescott. I would like to invite you to join me every Tuesday morning from 7 to 8 for Morning Review, the Sojourner Truth Edition. We'll be bringing you news and views on the impact on women, children, and men of U.S. domestic and foreign policy and how diverse communities respond locally, nationally, and internationally. If you don't want business as usual, if you want to find out what's really behind those news headlines, and if you want a world where the caring of people and the environment is the priority, join us for Morning Review, the Sojourner Truth Edition, every Tuesday morning, 7 to 8.
Welcome back to Voices from the Frontline on KPFK 90.7 FM in Los Angeles, 98.7 FM in Santa Barbara, Tambang Lu, Damon Azali Rojas, and then right now we have Pete White. Pete White, welcome to the show.
Hey, welcome. Thanks for having me.
So Pete is the executive director for the L.A. Coalition, L.A.
Community Action Network.
Community Action Network. Sorry, I just had a brain freeze right there.
No,
I think just to start off, you know, we actually mentioned on the top of the show that in the last 5 months, there have been 6,000 arrests in downtown, 6,700 quality of life, quote unquote, citations that have been given to folks in Skid Row. And I think what's really important is just, this just didn't start. This is kind of the seeds that have been growing off of stuff that's already been set up. So can you talk a little bit just about Skid Row, the history, why are so many people there, et cetera? Who are the people there?
Right. I mean, Skid Row has existed for 100 years. Downtown 100 years ago and definitely during World War II and during the Depression was very close to railroad lines. So at that time, you know, white middle-class men that had lost their jobs would hop on the train to come out west. You know, the old mantra, go out west, your pot of gold or your fortune is there. Because of this sort of migration, residential hotels began to crop up, brothels and, you know, things that supported a male-only or male-dominated lifestyle. From that, a few missions cropped up, and, you know, that's how the community was created. After that, you know, businesses came to Skid Row. The mission still remained. Crack cocaine and other things came to town, and affordable housing, you know, which has always been sort of scarce, continued to be scarce, and there was an influx of African-Americans from South L.A., like in the 70s and the 80s. And that's how now you really see a population that's predominantly African-American that has pretty much migrated from South Los Angeles because of lack of jobs, lack of housing, education, and things of that nature.
How many people live there?
There's 13,000, from 10 to 13,000 people, poor folks that currently live in downtown Los Angeles, better known as Skid Row.
And so that's, you know, in terms of if we look at the actual tickets, arrests, and whatnot, that's half the actual population down there.
No, absolutely. I mean, as you said earlier, there's been 6,000 arrests, and counting, of course, and 6,700 citations. That almost equals the number of people that currently live in downtown Los Angeles that are poor and dark, black and brown both.
So, Pete, you've been talking about these citations, these quality of life citations. Can you tell us what are they and what are they being cited for?
Yeah, I mean, I'll try and make this as visual as possible. Think about an elderly African-American man or a young African-American man standing on a corner smoking a cigarette. When the cigarette ash drops from the cigarette to the ground, police, three or four, rush the individual, put them in handcuffs, run their names for warrants, and ticket them. And even more, I mean, so that would be one of the extreme examples of what's going on downtown. I mean, individuals are also being ticketed for simply sitting on their bicycles. Sitting, not riding their bicycles, sitting on a bicycle, talking to a friend, that's a guaranteed ticket. If you're recycling, you know, cans or bottles, if you go in a trash can, that's pretty much a ticket. Any type of jaywalking, or quasi-jaywalking, let's say if you went into the intersection and the light was green when you entered the intersection, in any other community, as long as you went into the intersection when the light was green, you're not going to be guilty of jaywalking. But in Skid Row, if you are caught in the intersection at any time that light turns red, you're given a ticket. And so what it really boils down to is that there's a criminalization of all the basic things that we do as humans that's being criminalized in downtown Los Angeles right now.
So, I mean, I think that's kind of like what we've just seen citywide. I mean, particularly with the people you're talking about, Black, Latino, you know, poor folks, is like urban life is being criminalized. Things that weren't criminalized in the 80s are now. I mean, I think last week we had Ruthie Gilmore on the show, and she was saying basically every year since 1980, I think it was 1982 or 1984, there have been 100 to 200 new laws being put on the books of things that weren't crimes anymore.
Oh, absolutely. Not only that, I think what the listeners should realize, laws that were formerly infractions, that were infractions are now misdemeanors. So that's the other way. The other way that they create these sort of traps is to change the penalty in which a person can get. So if it's an infraction, that's going to be a monetary fine only. But if it's a misdemeanor, that can be jail time as well as money. So the way that they attempt to sort of stop our movement and stop our existence is to make infractions misdemeanors and misdemeanors felonies. And yeah, so criminalization is the name of the game in Los Angeles right now.
And so, and I think all this kind of this criminalization is it's not just, it's a coherent theory. So I think a lot of people know who, you know, William Bratton, who's coming up for, you know, his second term on, I know you guys are doing stuff around the April 30th. Hearing in terms of his extension of his, you know, his second term. But I think this whole broader thing of Broken Windows, Safer Cities Initiative, I mean, I've talked to you and you've talked a lot about how this is like the modern update kind of vagrancy laws, black coats.
Absolutely. I mean, broken windows, I mean, vagrancy policing has been going on since, you know, civilization began. There's always poor people or the undesirable have always been targeted by certain types of codes and laws. And these pretty much have always been called vagrancy laws. The thing I think the listeners need to realize is the language we use. Like, when we talk about broken windows policing, the rhetoric is usually community-based policing. And that sounds friendly enough. Like, we would all in our communities want community-based policing, but we need to know where that comes from. So let's take the inception of the broken windows theory. Dr. George Kelling was the author, one of the authors of the broken windows theory. He's here in Los Angeles right now, gaining an exorbitant amount of money from Chief Bratton to implement this program. Now, if you read the Nation article that released it in the early 80s, how they determined a community was broken, one of the more peculiar ways they knew was if they saw an interracial couple, they said that the communities were breaking down. If they saw black females, and they were very, very upfront with this. Black females in shorts talking to men in cars. You knew that was a signal of the community breaking down. So the roots of this broken windows theory is very, very racist. It's very, 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 very lethal when unleashed in communities that are facing gentrification. And the effects are long standing. And so I just think people need to understand when we have these conversations about policing and community policing, what that really means in the broken windows theories context.
Well, I think all the thing you're saying in terms of the policing being tremendously racist is, you know, very, very upfront and clear. And you can just see in terms of the number of people who are in prison, you know, I think that is abundantly clear. What I think a lot of probably our listeners don't know is just in terms of how does housing play into this, because I kind of want to get into that, because I know you guys are doing an action on Wednesday.
Mm-hmm.
And I think let's start that by you talking about the apartheid housing, the different entrances for black and white people.
So, I mean, and it's crazy because, you know, what we're really talking about is sort of Jim Crow politics in year 2007. And this conversation is not a hidden conversation. Take, for example, there's a residential hotel across the street from our office. And, you know, the 400-plus tenants that have lived there have been living under slum conditions for quite some time. We've organized the building, and we've begun to change that. But during the big gentrification push, the owner thought it was all right, and clearly it was all right by the powers that be in the city, thought it was okay to open separate entrances to the building. So imagine this. It's a 9-story building. On the main street side, the entrance has high-speed elevators. It has nice palm trees. It has a secured entrance, and you can just go up into the lofts. On the 5th street side, it looks like a level 4 prison yard. It's black. It's dark. It's grimy. And the crazy part about it is that the conditions, those pristine conditions that are being afforded by the upper-income white folks, and that's pretty much who it is up there, is because of the poor people living underneath them. And there's many examples of sort of this apartheid-type housing happening in Los Angeles. The Grand Avenue Project, when it started out, the related company was very clear in all of their public meetings saying that there were going to be separate entrances for the market rate and the quote-unquote affordable housing. Had no problem, you know, presented this in front of the city council. Not a council person flinched. No one thought to make the connection that this was more of the same Jim Crow apartheid-type politics that were going on. And so for us, we've said that enough is enough, that affordable housing has got to be, and when I say affordable housing that's affordable to poor folks in Los Angeles has got to be the first order of the day. On April 25th, we're planning to march 1,000 strong from Alvera Street to City Hall to let them know that we're tired of the lip service, we're tired of the rhetoric. We need to be about the people's business and about the people's business of housing. And in addition, we need to stop the criminalization of all poor Angelenos that they're attempting to move out of the city. Let's be clear, the gang push is really about pushing undesirables away, the same way they're attempting to push poor folks out of downtown. So we must make these connections.
So, Pete, where does the mayor stand on this? And are there any allies? You said that this was actually passed through the city council in terms of a lot of these moves to gentrify downtown. Are there any folks on the city council? Where's Parks, Perry?
I mean, I would say that the best person on affordable housing, and this may shock you, and this is because, you know, folks organized and built a base of power, has been Jan Perry. I mean, outside of that, we don't have many council folk that are willing to go to the developers who oftentimes fill their campaign coffers and say that you need to include housing for everyday people in your development. No one has been willing to do that. They will not bite the hands that feed them. And so what we'll hear is a lot of rhetoric. We'll hear that, you know, there's going to be $100 million here and and $50 million there for housing and for this and that, but it's just more rhetoric. If you dug deeper, if you said, where is that money going to come from and when it's going to get here, there would be a totally different conversation.
Right. So Wednesday the 25th, you guys are meeting at La Placita at 8 o'clock?
We are meeting at La Placita at 8 o'clock. We are going to, for folks who want to go to Mass, it's 8 o'clock. For everyone else, it's 8:30. It's going to be on the Spring Street side. There's going to be a rally, and then we're going to march to City Hall. We're going to march on City Hall.
Okay, and so then in terms of if people want to, first of all, just to give mad props to LA Can, LA Community Action Network, y'all should just roll with them. Lots of energy, lots of hype, so I think that if you can give out your phone number, people can meet up with you. Are you going to have a banner?
Absolutely. Here, let me give out the phone number. It's 213-228-0024, 213-228-0024. If you're not, you know, the faint at heart, you could walk with us. We're going to be walking from L.A. Can to Alvera Street, which is about 5 blocks, and then we're going to march on City Hall as well. But you can call that number. We can give you more information. We would love to see all Angelenos who care about housing, who care about criminalization, to come out and say that and to come out and say no more lip service.
All right. Well, Pete White from LA Can, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, so I will definitely be down there on Wednesday, and hopefully a lot of our listeners will too.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
All right. Have a good one.
Bye-bye.
So that's going to be the end of our show, Voices from the Frontlines, this week. We would like to thank our guests today. We're talking to Pete White. We had Loretta Ross before, and then Delia Herrera before that. James Brown's birthday is coming up, so we started off the show with James Brown. We had Dr. Zeus, Manu Dibango, and Maccabee. We'd like to thank our producer, Alan Minsky, assistant producer, Lisa Adler, our engineer, Maggie LaPique. We'll see you next week on Voices from the Front Lines. Up next, you should stick around. Susie Weissman on Beneath the Surface is going to be talking to Ralph Nader. So stay strong, stand up. Go for it.
Come and say look on Rwanda. Me say look on Zaire. A lot of people dead down there. And according to the media, all you can hear it is ethnic cleansing. And the people not care, but it's deeper. Cause the West have economic interest.